There are still many places in the solar system that remain unexplored. Some of them are right here on Earth. You're listening to Western Worlds on astronomy.fm. Hello and welcome to Season 4 of Western Worlds, where over the coming weeks we'll once again talk to people on the frontiers of space exploration and planetary science, and learn about current research and future plans for exploring the solar system and understanding our place in it. My name is Raymond Francis, and I'm coming to you this week, as every week, from CPSX, the Center for Planetary Science and Exploration, at Western University in London, Ontario, Canada, where we co-produce this program with astronomy.fm. This season we'll cover research from every corner of the solar system, but in today's episode, we'll start off by meeting someone who's learning to explore those other worlds by first exploring our own. Today's astronauts work and live in low Earth orbit, with the International Space Station continuously inhabited for well over a decade. This unparalleled technical achievement is the site of a great variety of research, including in planetary science. But plans are already underway to apply the lessons learned there on missions to send astronauts to the Moon, Mars, and other bodies. Jeremy Hansen joined the Canadian Space Agency's Astronaut Corps in 2009. While he works in ISS Mission Control and awaits his first assignment to the station, he's already training for missions to those other worlds. Over the last 3 years, he's taken part in a series of CPSX expeditions to explore impact craters in northern Canada, learning geology, studying the kinds of rocks he'll see on planetary surfaces, and practicing the process of exploring places where no one has gone before. Western World's David Kirsch spoke to Jeremy recently about his work supporting current space missions and preparing for those of the future.
All right, Jeremy Hansen, welcome to Western Worlds. We're glad to have you here.
Yeah, my pleasure.
To begin with, I'd like to ask, what was your path to becoming an astronaut?
Well, I suppose it started out when I was quite young and with an infatuation with space and aviation, lots of space books. I had a treehouse decorated as a rocket ship, went on lots of adventures. And I don't think I ever lost that passion for space. I was motivated by the humans walking on the moon. I saw pictures of Neil Armstrong growing up. That very much motivated me. And it was something I kept with me through all of my academic years, in the back of my mind wondering and if I would ever have the opportunity to apply for a job like the one I have now.
Yeah, so a lot of kids and adults too, obviously, do dream of becoming an astronaut, but most kind of eventually let that go. So how did you manage to hold on to that dream? Is it just stubbornness or what?
I suppose to some extent, but really, when I looked at the pictures of Neil Armstrong standing on the moon, I think that opened up what was possible in my mind. And it became very clear to me that this was possible. And at some point in my life, probably in my university years, is when I really came to realize that I was no different than anyone else. I was not better or worse, and that I had as many opportunities as everyone else on this planet, certainly within Canadian society, for sure. And so I knew it was possible. I didn't necessarily think it was likely. In fact, I knew it was not likely that I would be an astronaut, but I certainly knew it was possible. And I kept it in the back of my head to the point where when I made major decisions in my academic career or my life or my military career, I was very careful not to close the doors that might prevent me from being an astronaut.
Interesting. So it was more about not closing doors than trying to open them?
Yeah, at some point I made a conscious decision that I would not measure my success in life, whether I was an astronaut or not. It became clear to me that the best way to live was to enjoy the life you're living, no matter where you end up. And some of that advice I received from Chris Hadfield, actually, when I was in university, I was basically asking him a similar question with respect to which academic pursuits I should follow. And he was very clear. He said, follow the ones you're most passionate about. Do what you want to do in life, and that will lead you to a successful and enjoyable life. And I think that's really great advice. And that's what I did. And so I chose things that I wanted to do, and knowing that, well, that would be the greatest contribution that I could make.
Excellent. Sounds like some good advice there.
Yeah.
So what would be your advice for people who specifically do want to get involved, and maybe not even necessarily to become an astronaut, but to get involved in NASA or CSA space programs?
Well, the first thing is I always say is find your passions in life and follow what you're passionate about. And then when you dig down a little deeper, in at least in the initial aspects of space exploration, it's going to be important to have a scientific or mathematics or engineering background, just so that you have the base to understand the exploration that you're part of. But then beyond that, and this is very important, you need to have a diverse and challenged background. I don't think it's enough to spend all of your time in books. You need to challenge yourself. And for me, I did that in the Air Cadet program. Air Cadets really challenged me. It got me outside my bubble. It forced me to learn about citizenship, teamwork, and leadership. As a young adolescent, I was leading other cadets. And that put me way outside my comfort zone early in life. And then it took me into aviation. And flying is very challenging. And that gave me a lot of confidence moving forward. And ultimately, the Air Cadet program is what I credit with preparing me to join the Royal Canadian Air Force. So what I say to people is that you need to find something to challenge yourself. Air Cadets is a good example, but it could be camping or mountain climbing or sports teams or student council. But you need to get out there and challenge yourself in a number of diverse ways.
Yeah, a good thing to do even if you don't want to be an astronaut.
It leads to a very rich life, absolutely.
So you were here at Western a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just wondering, what is your connection to Western's Center for Planetary Science and Exploration?
Yeah, this is one of those things, almost really good luck landed me in this positive relationship with Western. So I was doing geology training at the Johnson Space Center with all of my other classmates during the initial two-year basic astronaut training. And I was speaking with one of our teachers, Dr. Dean Epler, and he said, hey, I know a geologist at Western, and since he's Canadian, I thought maybe you might want to work with him. He's going on an expedition this summer to explore a crater, and I think it'd be a great opportunity. So we got in touch with him. The Canadian Space Agency was on board, and we formed this relationship where for the past two summers, Dr. Rosinski has taken me to some meteor craters in Canada, one in Saskatchewan and one on Victoria Island in the Canadian Arctic. It's been such a tremendous experience. Dr. Rosinski, or Oz, as I usually call him, is a great teacher, an excellent teacher. And the field experience itself is very applicable to space travel. For example, last summer we took a twin otter up into the Arctic. It just finds a place to land. There's no runway. You just find a suitable place. It lands, kicks all your stuff out, and the six of us were just in the Arctic for 12 days on our own. And this is a very good analog for being trapped in the tin can of space, if you will. There's some significant differences, but there's a lot of similarities to the type of approach you need to take in an environment like that. So I've been learning a lot from Oz over the last couple years, and in fact, this summer we're going up to the Arctic again to explore another crater.
Is the geology part of your training, or is it really just more about the mission, just the exploration part of it?
Well, that's the great thing. It's both. So geology is important because we are preparing to go beyond low Earth orbit again, and there's a very realistic chance that in my career span that I may walk on another planetary body, maybe the moon, or maybe explore an asteroid, and as we gear up to go to Mars. So the geology aspect of the training is very real. All of the astronauts have some aspect of geology training. I happen to think mine is probably the coolest, but everyone's getting something. And then on top of that, there's this, what we refer to it as, is expeditionary training. And that's the idea of going somewhere outside the safety net of society. You can't just call 911 in the Arctic, and you're going somewhere and you're relying on your expeditionary skills and your teamwork skills to accomplish a goal in an environment that's often not very comfortable. And that's the reality of these trips. So it's a great training opportunity.
Interesting. Now, obviously, the majority of your time is not going to be spent in space. So,
right.
So as you just talked about, a lot of your time is spent training. So how much of your time is spent training, and what other sorts of things do you have to do as part of your job?
Yeah, I've never sat down and calculated it, but I would assume that about 50% of my time I spend training, and about the other 50% I spend supporting the space program. So a good example was during Chris's mission, I was his crew support astronaut, which meant I was going to a lot of meetings and representing the astronaut office at these meetings, because you have an enormous program operating the International Space Station, a lot of people doing their job, and you have to have, at the higher levels, you have to have these meetings where people get together and make sure everything integrates and that the job is going, or the mission is going to be accomplished. And so I was a representative of those meetings. So not only was that my contribution, but it was also a tremendous learning opportunity for a rookie astronaut. not like me. And there's always jobs that need to be done just to keep the International Space Station alive and the program working. So you just find yourself picking up the loose ends of what needs to be accomplished.
All right. Now, speaking of Chris Hadfield and something that he certainly made it look like it was part of his job, he had a very big impact on social media. Going forward, do you have any plans or are there any wider agency plans to replicate that sort of social media presence?
Absolutely. The social media of Chris's mission was, it started well before Chris's mission, and both David Saint-Jacques, the other rookie astronaut, and myself, we have been using Twitter for some time. And the agency, I think, has learned a lot during Bob Thirst's previous mission, and now this time Chris Hadfield's mission. We've learned a lot, and so we definitely, that's our goal, is to continue to educate Canadian society and to bring them along and to bring space back to them. So we'll be looking for more of those types of opportunities and even new and better ideas. So absolutely, we think that's an important aspect of space exploration. One of the greatest things that Chris's mission brought back to us is perspective. I think that's why people were so captivated by the photos he was sharing and the insights that he had while he was in space, is that he left our planet, he looked back upon it, and he gave us this amazing perspective of this rock we live on, spaceship Earth, hurtling through space with this tiny bubble of air that keeps us alive. And he made it very clear that to him, it becomes obvious when you look at it in that perspective that you have to work together. All of the inhabitants of the spaceship have to work together to keep the planet in good shape and to take care of one another. And I think that's a really important perspective. And it's not necessarily the primary goal of space exploration when we look at it from a programmatic point of view, but I think it's probably one of the greatest things that space exploration does for us.
Yeah, I agree. He certainly brought a lot of poetry to his posts and to informing the people about what he was doing.
Yeah, and just how amazing was that to share that. And I was at an air show this weekend, and I was speaking in front of the crowd with the announcer, and he asked, and there was 22,000 people at this air show, and he asked all those that could hear anyway how many people had seen at least one photo from Chris's mission, and all I could see were hands, as far as I could see. And I thought that was pretty telling.
Yeah, that's awesome. Now, both you and he are CSA astronauts, so I just wonder, how does your role differ from the American NASA astronauts that you might be around?
It's very similar. Our Canadian Astronaut Corps integrates almost seamlessly into the American Astronaut Corps, as well as the Japanese follow the same model as Canada. And because our Astronaut Corps is so much smaller, it just makes more sense for us to contribute to the overall astronaut program, if you will. And so largely our roles are the same. Really, the only difference is the fact that I have another agency, the Canadian Space Agency, to make a contribution towards, and obviously a lot of time spent in Canada trying to share what we've learned about space and what we're doing in space with Canadians. So really, that's the only difference.
All right. Now, with all these countries working together, and every country right now is having its own sort of budget issues, how have budget issues affected you? Have they impacted you?
No, I wouldn't say they've impacted me. I guess you can't know in what we're going to have for flight opportunities in the future. So when I was hired, basically, they gave me a spectrum of, what could happen, and this was in line with expectations. So I don't think there's been a significant impact to my career thus far. And right now, when I look around, I think there's a lot of potential for Canada. I think right now there's some really great projects that we could be involved in the future that would be good for Canada, both on the industry side and both on just the overall big picture for Canada side. And so I'm very optimistic that we're going to do some amazing things going forward.
All right. Now, there are the occasional stories of Canada devoting funds to something and then having to back out, or other countries. I mean, each country is going through this in its own way. So do you think that is impacting the cooperation that has to be necessary for modern space exploration?
Well, it's interesting, but the way we view it often is that the cooperation is actually what enables us to move forward. Because when you have something like the International Space Station, we all made agreements to operate this station until 2015 initially, and now we've all agreed to operate it until 2020, and we're looking at extending that even further. So yes, at times there are always our financial constraints. But because of this international cooperation, we can kind of leverage each other's times of strength and help the other countries out in their times of economic weakness. So I think the international partnership is really what has enabled us to move forward and to have this amazing orbiting laboratory above our planet.
Okay, well, that's obviously good to hear. Now, in the wider future of space exploration, there's also going to be the issue of private enterprise, and there already is in the form of SpaceX, Virgin Galactic, and stuff. So how do you see the roles of government versus private spaceflight evolving in the next few years?
Yeah, I'm really excited about the fact that private industry is getting involved in spaceflight. I think it marks a turning point. I look back at aviation as something to correlate against. We just had powered flight in Canada. The 100th anniversary was in 2009. And if you look at the history of aviation, when commercial got involved, that really changed the map. Now you and I can get an airplane and fly anywhere in the world we want to go. And that's what I see happening in space right now. I see the infancy of this commercial space market. And that's very exciting to me. That's what tells me right now that things are going to change probably faster than we realize with respect to space exploration, that it won't be just government astronauts in the future. We'll have civilian astronauts as well, or non-government astronauts. And I think it'll increase the pace at which we move out from low Earth orbit. So I find that very motivating when I look at it right now.
Can you think of any roles that you might have going forward with private spaceflight?
Yeah, well, I guess I didn't answer your question specifically. What would be the government role in that case? I think the government role is certainly, when you look at the Canadian Space Agency, is to help private industry take those initial steps. So there's a lot of risk to a company to doing the first mission of something, for example. The government basically is an insurance policy to allow these industries to develop. And as these industries, these current industries like SpaceX, like you mentioned, take hold, and government will be left to take the next steps to move outside low Earth orbit. And so I do see the role of government changing. I don't think there will ever be any need. In fact, it would be almost a negative to compete with commercial industry, who's a little bit leaner and more efficient at doing these things. So the government role will definitely change. As for me, I think, you know, and when I look in the immediate future, I'll definitely stay on the government side of the program. I'm here. I've committed myself to making a contribution in the light of the government program. But you never know what opportunities may present themselves well into the future.
Hopefully it's an interesting future, and certainly sounds like it'll be interesting.
I think so, absolutely. It already is interesting.
Yeah. You mentioned that there is a certain amount of risk involved. So everyone's aware that there are dangers inherent to using rockets and to doing spaceflight in general. So how do you personally deal with the knowledge of that danger?
Well, I've certainly considered it, but when I give it thought, I just realized that we do the very best we can to manage the risk. Anytime we launch a vehicle, we looked at all these systems. We've put in backup systems, if you will. We have a backup plan. It's on the Soyuz rocket, for example, and on the new rockets being developed right now. We have abort motors, which is basically an ejection seat for the capsule to get off the stack. So we have all these things in place to reduce the risks of flying in space. We have all these procedures on board the International Space Station to try and reduce the odds of losing astronauts on board the International Space Station. But at the end of the day, you just need to realize that there are some events that you will not be able to overcome. And just like getting in my car today at the end of the workday and driving home, there are some things that could happen on the road that I just won't be able to save my own life. And that's just the reality of life. And it's more important to live every day passionately and doing something you love to do than to worry about losing life.
I guess you sort of already answered this, but I always did wonder, when Columbia was lost, there was debate over whether we should continue with spaceflight at all. And I recall thinking that the loss of the space program would have been like the very last thing that those astronauts would have wanted. So when tragedy does occur, how do you think the public should react?
Yeah, I thought the reaction was a little bit unrealistic with respect to Columbia. I mean, I was very moved by that. It was very powerful. It was very sad. But at no point did it cross my mind that we would stop the program. People die every day, and those were great people. They made a significant contribution to society, but their lives were no more or no less important than any other lives on the planet. And we lose people every day. And I thought that kind of reaction to we need to have a perfectly safe space program and can't lose anyone is not realistic. We know that going forward, we are going to kill people in space, just like today, people are going to die traveling to and from work. And we could take extreme measures to stop people from dying, going to and from work. We could restrict that, but we never make that choice. And so it's not realistic to make that type of choice with respect to something as important as space exploration.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, so to turn it around to something a little less morbid, are you scheduled? Do you have an idea of when you'll be going up?
No, no specifics to date. We don't know when Canada's next slot will be for another Canadian astronaut to fly in space, but we have a goal as an agency certainly to fly both David and I in this decade, and I see, you know, people making efforts to try and make that happen. So that makes me pretty optimistic. I think I feel pretty privileged to do that. And I also see that as we look forward, you know, there's a little bit of uncertainty in the timings now and how many flights we'll have. But as these new vehicles become useful and are proven, then I could see us hopefully hiring some new astronauts for the Canadian Astronaut Corps. core, which I think is really exciting.
Something for our listeners to think about?
Yeah, absolutely. And I would definitely see us hiring again in the next few years, maybe 2 to 5 years. I'd say I would almost be certain we'd hire by then at least. And then I could see us building up some momentum going from there. Those would be my hopes for the agency anyway.
Good. So when you do go up, are there any things that you personally plan or look forward to doing in space?
Well, mostly I look forward to looking back at our planet. Every time I speak to astronauts who have come back from the space station, they have just really been moved and taken by the view of our planet. And on a 6-month mission, or in Chris's case, 5-month mission, there's just so much time to spend looking out the window and seeing your planet. And I was speaking with Don Pettit, actually. He's an American astronaut, and he had some advice for us. We were talking around the dinner table one night, and he said, look, when you go to space, don't plan to do anything in space that you can do on Earth. And his point was, make the most of your time up there, and any free time you have, spend it looking out the window, and it'll be a very enriching experience for you.
Excellent. That should be really fun. Now, just to close it off, and I think most of our listeners don't really need to hear the answer to this question, but I'd like to hear your answer to it anyway, is why do you think it's important that humanity goes to space?
There are a lot of different reasons. You know, we talk a lot about the scientific and technological benefits to society. You know, and this is a very real reason. You have, when you set a big goal, like exploring space, you bring great minds together, and that's when we achieve the greatest things. And sometimes we achieve things we weren't even expecting to achieve. And so I think that's one of the roles of space exploration, is to challenge ourselves. Just like you and I personally, if we never challenge ourselves, if we never keep pushing ourselves, then we don't have as an enriched life as we would otherwise when we do challenge ourselves. So I think space exploration does that for humanity, for the scientific fields, for the medical fields, for the engineering fields. I think that's really important. And we're learning a lot about the human body. And so there's all these reasons. Oh, and another one is international cooperation. You know, we're two of the major partners of the International Space Station, Russia, the United States, and Canada. I mean, we were not always allies. There was an entire Cold War between North America and Russia. And now we live and work together on the International Space Station, use their rockets to get there and get home. And that type of international cooperation has significant impacts to society, a global society. I think that's really, really important. And all of those things are very relevant. But for me, it always comes back to perspective. I think there's something inside of us as human beings. We know we want to learn more about what's out there. And for me, the more we learn about what's beyond our planet, the more I want to know. I mean, it's just absolutely mind-boggling what we've learned about our universe thus far. And to me, it just doesn't all add up. It seems there's a lot more to the story, and it's obvious there is a lot more to the story. And I think we've always wanted to know what's over the horizon, what's over the next mountain ridge, and that's just humanity. We need to explore, and I think that's important. And so that perspective of leaving, looking back upon your planet, and looking out into the universe, I think is the ultimate reason why we should go to space.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us.
My pleasure. Have a great day.
You're listening to Western Worlds on astronomy.fm. Let's go to the discussion. So we just heard the interview with Jeremy Hansen that Dave gave us here. That was, he has a particularly interesting job, even for an astronaut.
Yeah, I really loved how he gets to not only be like, get trained for being an astronaut, but also be in the field and do geological work. Like, I wouldn't expect them to do that unless, you know, they eventually plan to go to Moon or Mars, which right now, according to budget, I don't see it's possible, but they're still getting trained for it.
Yeah, well, it seems to be kind of in his long-term hope. And even, you know, even if he doesn't fly to the Moon or someplace in the next few years, or even if it's not him, but the next generation of astronauts who do. Either way, learning that stuff now and learning how to train astronauts in that is probably a good practice.
He also is a good promoter for space and science for little kids, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. Just like Chris Affleck, after career of astronaut, they start doing public outreach and mm-hmm. they inspire the next generation who will probably walk on Mars or beyond.
Yeah.
It's very interesting to see like what he talked about, that within next 2 to 5 years, they will be recruiting more astronauts. Current generation, who is probably, let's say, in college or grad school, can probably be the next astronaut. You never know.
Yeah, you never know. And it's, you know, I'm sure those timelines are something that's very difficult to plan for. Yeah, I mean, you know, hopefully there will be another round, and hopefully it'll be soon. Because I guess now with the retirement of of Chris Hadfield, we have two active astronauts in the program, and it looks like there's some room.
Yeah, they can probably add more, yeah. Given that we still don't know, though, when the next slot is going to be for Canada. But
that's right. Clearly, one of the targets for where to put our astronauts is the ISS, and presumably, there's a spot coming up at some point. You know, we used to get by on our credits for building the robotics, and I think we've just about used up.
Yeah.
that account. You know, I guess those things will change, but the ISS partnership has evolved in the way we send people up there already, so there may yet be more chances. And there are other destinations that may come.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, also, like you mentioned, private space exploration, mm-hmm. So maybe in the future, when the private sector catches up technologically, then maybe we'll start recruiting astronauts as well for space tourism. You know, you need someone with experience in space to fly the spacecraft and also to tell people, like, what to look at.
Someone needs to calm the tourists down, yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure if you know, but there are already, like, for example, SpaceX and, like, the Enterprise actually have astronauts who act as consultants. Obviously, you need someone who has experience and been in space to make something that is going to work in space. Yeah. So there are lots of astronauts who now work as a consultant to such companies. And, you know, eventually, even if they don't fly, they have so much training, they can probably help the privatization of someday we will have space tourism.
Yeah. Well, and in fact, even NASA officially is providing some kind of consultancy to these companies, because some of them, SpaceX among them, are developing spacecraft to offer commercial crew transportation services to the ISS. And so they, you know, they send astronauts to those companies to be trained on the spacecraft that are in development and to provide feedback from their experience on Soyuz and Space Shuttle. Who knows what role the Canadian astronauts will have in that kind of thing, and whether these may be the kind of routes that we send our astronauts on to the space station.
I also like when he talked about his field work, where he actually gets to go to different places, like analog places, and get to actually do some geology. And from what I've heard, I think he's a physics major, and he probably understands some of the geology, and he's probably learning a lot. I'm not sure if you have any idea, since you have done a lot of analog.
Yeah, well, in fact, I was with him on that trip last summer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that was Dr. Rosinski from CBSX who led an expedition to the what's now called the Tununik impact structure on Victoria Island, the Northwest Territories. He brought along Jeremy Hansen, but also four of his students from CBSX, from undergrad to PhD. And so I was there to learn how to do this kind of field work. I'm doing engineering, but I'm supposed to be applying it in the world of geology, so learning how they explore places, and also just to get some more training in geology. Yeah, I was very fortunate to tag along, and can't but agree with his description that it really is like going to Mars. You know, the airplane drops you off in the middle of nowhere. As he says, the Twin Otter is quite impressive in that it can land on just a flat plane of gravel, basically. That's all it needs. And then it takes off and it disappears, and you're all by yourself, and you don't see a sunset for 2 weeks because, you know, you're so far north.
Yeah, that's really amazing. And I think such training would be very helpful for astronauts, especially if they go up in space and, you know, if they're stationed at ISS and if they look at something on Earth and be like, oh, look at that. You know, if they have training, they understand what's going on. It's a crater or, I don't know, a volcano or something like that. Especially from what I can see from Chris Hadfield's image collection. And I can see he actually put up some pretty interesting geological formations, which obviously intrigued a lot of people who are not interested in science or don't support space industry that much, given that we spend so much money on it. But seeing Earth from, hey, I find such awesome geological formations actually get people intrigued towards such areas.
I really liked also his attitude towards becoming an astronaut, and the idea that, you know, you can keep that as a goal, but maybe don't judge your life in terms of whether you get it. Because, you know, he and David Saint-Jacques were selected. Those are 2 out of 6,000 who applied out of 34 million in the country. Even people who are very well qualified may never get the chance to do that. But if you spend your life doing interesting things that help you to become skilled and qualified, well, that's a valuable thing in itself, right? So the worst outcome of not becoming an astronaut is that you've nonetheless made yourself a better person. So
yeah. I would imagine like how much physical training they go through while being an astronaut or for being an astronaut is probably going to change their life. For a person like me who would want to be an astronaut, I would have to go to the gym, which would be like the last thing on my mind right now, being a grad student. That might make me a better person. And, you know, you would learn a lot of skills while being interviewed or while being in the queue for being an astronaut.
I have as well. I must agree with his assessment of the Air Cadet program. I went through that as well. And it's a great way to spend your youth and to learn a lot of things early on.
I did not do my schooling here. We do not have things like that back home in India, but I wish I had been as cold here. I would have taken part in, and I'm very glad, like, especially when we do outreach events and go to schools, I see so many people are interested from such young age.
Mm-hmm.
And over here, you actually, teachers actually encourage you to go into different fields, whether it be weird being an astronaut or being a biologist, mm-hmm. like, or astrobiologist, as some people want to be when I go to schools. But it's great to see how there are different programs to encourage people's interest.
Yep.
And he mentioned about the air cadet program. I had no idea about it until I heard about it.
It's true. It's a real thing. And at any time, there's the group of young people who are out learning how to fly airplanes or lead people on wilderness expeditions and things like that. It's a great program. I certainly highly recommend it for young people.
That's our show for this week. Western Worlds was a co-production of the Center for Planetary Science and Exploration and Astronomy.fm. Western Worlds was created by John Moores. This episode was produced by Parshati Patel and Michael Forster and featured an interview by co-host David Kirsch. Our roundtable discussion featured co-hosts Zengyi Hu, Parshati Patel, and Raymond Francis. Our editors were David Kirsch and Parshati Patel, and I'm Raymond Francis. Our theme music is Heliosheath by Sean Kim. You can continue the conversation online and listen to past episodes or learn more about Western Worlds by visiting our website at www.cpsx.uwo.ca/westernworlds. You can also email us at westernworlds@uwo.ca. On Twitter, we are at WWAFM, and on Facebook, we are facebook.com/westernworlds. On behalf of everyone here at Western Worlds, I'd like to thank you once again for making World Enough in Time to join us in this conversation. I hope you can join us again next week, right here on astronomy.fm.